Welcome back, everybody, to A Galaxy Not So Far Away, the only podcast from Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore. I'm your host, Gary.
Oh, and I'm Becca.
Welcome, Becca. And today we have with us store manager Kelly.
Hi, everybody.
Victoria.
Hello.
And Kylie.
Hey.
I feel like it's nice to like chit chat with everybody because we've been doing these like less frequently, and so it's just like, oh, my friends are here.
Yeah, anytime we've got today, like, a store meeting now, it's on like
yeah,
or something.
Totally.
It's like, oh, it's so good to see everybody.
It's exactly. It was kind of nice to just like see people's faces when we were doing our most recent meeting. Today we're talking about, we're just having another light episode. We've been doing some like light episodes lately because we had a month of like real drama. So we're talking about like new books that have come out this year that are paperback releases that we've been really excited about. A lot of us, you know, especially because we work at the bookstore, we get to read ARCs early, but most of those come out as like hardcovers, and that price point can be really hard for people. I struggle to buy $30 books when they come in, even if they're gorgeous. So we want to like shout out some of the books that people might have skipped over because, you know, hardcovers are hard to pay for and they take up a lot of room on your shelf.
They're also, they just give me so much anxiety when I'm holding them for some reason.
Do they? I was going to ask if people had preferences of like if they prefer hardcovers or paperbacks or if that matters.
I have sweaty hands and I just like end up like. I end up, like, ripping book covers without even, like, meaning to.
Oh, no.
So it really stresses me out.
I'm much less precious about paperbacks than I am about hardcovers. Mostly, usually I try and keep my hardcovers nicer. Like, I'll still, it's not like I buy them and I don't read them. Like, I definitely read them. And I'm not like super careful while I'm reading them. Like, oh, I have to turn the page very slowly or anything like that. But I'm definitely a lot more haphazard with paperbacks.
Yeah.
They're easier to fit in your bag too. They're not as big.
But the weird thing for me, when I was a kid, I was sort of the opposite, right? Like I bought all the Harry Potter books the night they came out, so those are hardcovers, but I just threw those in my backpack or in my locker. The covers are ruined. But I would buy paperbacks and I would read them like barely opening the paper because I don't want to break the spine. Like, I was so precious with my paperbacks.
My
I wanted them to look nice.
I love the spine. I love it on a paperback when you like open it enough so that the spine creases. It's like my favorite thing.
Because then it just falls open to those pages, or those pages are more likely to fall out. Paperbacks that I've read a lot of, the places where the spine is broken is where the pages come loose first.
See, I love that. I love a well-loved book. It makes me so happy.
I love a well-loved book, but I hate looking at cracked spines.
Oh.
That's...
It's weird, I know.
I go back and forth.
I was definitely more precious as a kid, like, and because I was precious as a kid, I now have to be precious when I'm rereading the books I owned when I was a kid, because I can't crack the spine now, like, years.
you tried so hard, you made it so far.
Exactly, so now every time I read Howl's Moving Castle, I just barely open the book, because I am not, that is, there's no crack in that spine, and there's not gonna be.
Yeah. That's so funny.
My copy of Howl's Moving Castle, like, you literally can't, you almost cannot read the title on the spine because it's been cracked.
Also, I have, so my dad's paperbacks of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings are actually, like, so, I look at them and I have such warm, loving feelings towards them because they're so wrecked. But I, the whole front cover of The Hobbit came off. It's just,
oh my God.
They're wrecked. And, you know, they're like 40-year-old books at this point, maybe more than that, 50 years old, probably. But it's, like, terrifying, you know, to think about, like, destroying books like that. But then it's also, like, it's also such a good feeling of, like, wow, they are very well loved.
That's the thing I think is, like, a lot of, like, the romance of, like, those old bookstores that just have, like, piles up to the ceiling and, like, a random cat that lives in them. Like, the thing that, like, I love the most about them is finding books that are, like, you can, like, barely tell what it is until you open it up. And then it's like, oh.
Yeah, that's true. I do love, I am a big fan, especially of, like, finding stuff in used. I want to find, if I'm going to buy a book that is, like, well-loved, That makes me feel really good. Like, oh, this book has, like, changed many hands. People really love this story. They keep rereading it. Some of the pages are dog-eared. Like, it's just, like, there's a wholesomeness to that, I think.
I love Absolutely. Finding old books that have notes in them.
Yes!
That's my favorite. Yes.
That's so good.
And also, I do that, but I only do that with my paperbacks. I don't do that with hardcovers.
Mm-mm. If it's
dog ear pages or listen
or leave notes
and leave notes both.
Oh goodness!
No. I only do that with paperbacks though because
I have no problem.
I ever lend you a paperback, you can't do that.
I wouldn't. It's not my book. I don't do that to other people's books.
I just have no, like, I don't know, I think it's controversial because I don't care about, like, all those, like, little things. Like, I have dog-eared book pages. Like, if I have to do it, I have to do it. And I definitely have books that have been a little overloved and, like, fall apart. And I know it's because I was not being thoughtful with them. And when I was younger, I used to, like, doodle in the, like, empty space, like, while I was reading.
Amazing.
I love that. I don't know. I've never been much for, like, writing in books. I would do that for, like, school. Like, if I had to buy a paperback to read for my English class, I would underline stuff and I would take notes in the margins. But I don't really do that for stuff that I read for pleasure.
I don't either. Yeah, I got into the habit because of school. But, like, if there's a book, I don't do it very often. It's only if it's a book that I really love and that I've read multiple times. Like, I have a copy of Jane Eyre that is literally just falling apart, and there's things highlighted and underlined, and there's notes. Mostly it's just me giving snarky commentary because I think it's funny.
I like to do it because I like to draw characters from books, so I like to, like, highlight and make little notes and stuff when, like, they talk about, like, how a character looks or, like, a certain vibe that they have or, like, a very notable, like, positioning of the body. Like, I think it's easier to go back and, like, remember what the feeling of
and there's still that element of, like, research, like you would do for an English paper in that. In, like, this is something I want to be able to refer back to later.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really mark stuff in books, but, like, I also don't really use, like, bookmarks or things. I, like, lose bookmarks all the time. I'll try to use one, I'll get it.
How do you know where you are?
Because if you flip through a book, right, from front to back, you know, like, from the text on the page what you've read and what you have. Actually, usually I try to stop at a chapter.
No, Gary, some of us have ADD.
That's so much effort. You can just use, like, a post-it note.
I do. I lose them, and then I don't have, you know. Marks. I actually have a really good bookmark that Darcy made me.
I love my bookmark.
That has Kylo Ren on it. That I think is in a book on my shelf somewhere, and I don't know which book it's in anymore.
Is it?
Because I do that. I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
Is it cringy to you guys that I use the book jacket as a bookmark?
I do that for hard... Oh, I used to do that for hardcovers. I don't so much anymore because... the same thing as, like, creasing pages. Those flaps on the paperback warp after time.
Oh, I'll use that. Like, if I'm reading a hardcover and it has a dust jacket, I'll use the flaps.
It depends on how big the book is.
If it's a massive book, I wouldn't do that, then I'd find a bookmark.
I'm looking at my copy of The Lady from the Black Lagoon, and I'm looking at the edges of the jacket, and I'm like, maybe I am the reason that these keep ripping.
Yeah!
You know, that's what causes it.
It's loved.
It is loved.
That is one of my most loved books, for sure.
Amazing.
One of my most loved, let me see if I can grab it because I can't remember the author's name. It's Orion by Maggie Fury.
Oh, and, I don't know that one.
I read it so much, the front cover came off.
Good.
And then the back cover came off.
Beautiful.
And then pages started coming out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can't find this book anywhere. And then I want to say it was just, like, randomly in, like, oh, it was in, what's it called? Book Off over on in the.
I love Book Off.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just randomly there, and I was like, no way. So I immediately just, like, grabbed it and I threw it in my basket.
That's amazing. I have some books from when I was a kid that are like that, that are like falling apart. There is a, I have a fantasy novel that is like sort of a time travel romance fantasy like there's a lot of stuff going on in it, but I read it so many times that like pages are falling out of it, and I think I might have lost one or two of them as I've moved across the country, and they're out of print now. The series had like a new hardcover come out in the last 5 years, but you can't get the first like 6 books.
I am having
and it makes me so sad.
That's upsetting.
I'm having David grab a book for me. I've had this book literally, I'm not exaggerating, since I was 3.
Wow.
Talking about extremely loved books, it's called A Visit to Fairyland by Jane E. Gerver. It is this beautiful illustrated book about like the little like fairies that live amongst the like flowers and mushrooms and stuff like that. And like this book is beyond hanging by a thread. Like it,
that's precious.
It is creased and like scratched and has old stickers like attached in random places. And for some reason I scratched out the author's name when I was little. And like there's a huge chunk of the cover that's just like been ripped off, so it's just that like weird cardboardy texture. But this is, for all accounts, my favorite book in the entire world.
Aww. Amazing.
It was an imprint of Simon and Schuster, Little Simon.
Yeah.
The book is from 1997, but I've never seen another copy of it in person. And I mean,
who is the author on that one, you said?
It's a Jane E. Gerver.
Interesting.
And I mean, like, I've moved like 9 or 10 times in my life, and it's just always stayed with me.
That's precious. I love that. So we, you know, wanted to talk about like new stuff that's out this year. Does anyone have any particular like new titles? Or no, books that they were fans of in hardcover or whatever that are now in paperback that you guys want to like shout out?
Hands down, Grey Bastards by Jonathan French.
Yeah.
I'm going to plug that book wherever I can.
Absolutely.
I love that book.
I think that, Victoria, you and I have several in common for different, like, I think we both said Gideon the Ninth, and I see Boyfriend Material is also on your list.
Well, yeah, it's so, like...
It is so perfect.
It's so perfect. It's, like, this punky guy and, like, this, like... really posh other guy, and
he's like a banker, and like the punk guy's like, he's like, the punk kid is like a kid of like rock stars, and like his like publicist is like, you have to clean up your act, and he's like, well, I guess I'll try to date this super posh bank man.
Amazing. That sounds so fun.
Yeah. And then I know for the second in the Bastard series, True Bastards is coming out in paperback in September.
Oh, like late, that's soon. That's
late,
awesome.
Like late September.
Yeah.
And everyone should go buy it because I'm in the back of it.
What? Oh, yeah, I remember. I saw that. That's great.
A little, it's like a thank you to Victoria.
Yeah.
You have been hand-selling that book series since
like crazy.
Out, I think since the very first day it came out, because you had an advanced reading copy of it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those books that just like surprises you. It goes under the radar. I don't know of many bookstores that carry it. And yet everyone who has read it under your recommendation comes back and they say they love it.
For people who don't, I mean, I would assume that people listening would probably know what this book is, but for people who don't know, do you want to give like a little synopsis or whatever?
Like my elevator pitch for this book.
Yeah, what's your elevator pitch?
Imagine if Mad Max and Tolkien had a baby.
And that's a great elevator pitch.
And
sold.
And so it's about a gang of half orcs and thrice orcs, and they're kind of like the outcasts, but they're the ones who also like patrol the Badlands and kind of keep the full orcs away from everyone else, but everyone else still hates this ragtag group of guys and girls. And I really love them because they're like a motorcycle gang, but instead of riding hogs, they ride hogs.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Victoria, is this why your character in our D&D campaign is a half-orc that hates orcs?
So, funny enough, my character is inspired by a character in the book who is also
called Fetching. That doesn't surprise me. Oh, you just straight up named...
Straight up, and I even told the author, I sent him a message, and I'm like, hey, because he also plays D&D.
Yes.
And I said, just letting you know, my very first D&D character is my interpretation of Fetching, and he was, like, all about it.
That's fantastic. That's so funny.
If you can't tell, I love this book.
No, I couldn't tell at all. You feel very indifferent about it.
No, I've been meaning to get around to reading that one for a long time, and every time you talk about it, I'm like, why have I not read this book yet?
I don't know.
I should have to buy it.
You need to. You need to. You need to buy it.
I know. I'll do that. I mean, I guess if we're on the topic of like, hey, let's shout out books we talk about all the time. The Rune of Kings paperback came out, I think, last year, but the mass market is coming. Ooh. This month.
Oh, is it? For sure, it got pushed back, didn't it?
I think, last I checked, Ingram says that the pub date for the mass market is the 25th of this month. So that's next Tuesday from when people are listening to this episode.
Oh, that's exciting.
Which is exciting. And Name of All Things, the sequel to Ruin of Kings, came out in trade paperback earlier this year.
Yeah.
So people should definitely, absolutely check those out.
I'm so excited for the mass market of Ruin of Kings, because I'm just going to buy, like, 10 copies and, like,
just give them
with me at all times. And, like,
it's going to be so easy
to throw them at people.
We tried to sell so many of the hardcovers, but the hardcover was, like, $28. But now the mass market's going to be $7. We did sell a lot of the hardcovers, but imagine how many we're going to sell when it's only $7.99.
I can't wait. I really can't wait. It's like, we're going to be too powerful. That's what's going to happen.
It's great.
That's another thing I really like about when a staff pick or something you're really excited about goes into paperback or even into mass market. It's because it's so much easier to hand sell. It's so much easier to justify. It's so much easier to get somebody to like risk like $10 on a book they like might like, or you're telling them they're gonna like, but they don't know, than it is to get them to like buy it for $30 or something. Especially if they're not if they're on the fence, then you know.
We had a customer. I wish I remembered who it was. We had a customer that I was able to sell, because I'm pretty sure the paperback of Ruin of Kings came out before Name of All Things came out.
I think they came out at the same time. True. I think they came out at the same time.
Yeah, they usually line it up so that the releases for
that they were like side by side.
Yeah, I think it was either.
There must have been a different book. There must have been a different book. I remember hand selling a paperback to a customer who then came to the event for the sequel and ended up buying hardcovers of both because he wanted the same on his shelf. It's like, amazing. I get that.
I totally get that. I'm the same way. It's like, if I start a series off in hardback, I have to have the whole series in hardback. But then I also end up buying the paperback because I love it so much and I want to read it more, and it's easier to carry around a paperback.
Absolutely relatable.
So then I end up having at least two copies of every book.
I feel like once the paperback is out, the hardcover is like for show. And the paperback.
Yeah, that's my shelf copy.
I 100%. See, what I do with mine is if I have multiple copies of a book in different formats, is the paperback copy is always my lending copy. If I wanna
that makes sense.
Borrow it. And then I'll probably like reread the hardcover myself. But like if someone doesn't give me back a paperback, then I can buy another one. It's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
But I feel a lot sadder about hardcovers because those are expensive.
The only time that I get sad about not getting a paperback from someone back is if it was part of a box set. Even if they're the same covers, it's just now I've got a hole in this box. I should just get rid of the box, I guess.
I just don't lend books. I don't know, man.
I tell people not to lend me books because I keep books.
There's just too many people I'm not friends with anymore that I know have books that I can't remember the titles of anymore. And it's like, come on.
Hey, yeah, Gary, how are those Miss Marvel comics that I let you borrow
a year and a half ago? I read them. I finally read them.
Oh, you did? Okay.
When we did our bookstore reading day a couple months ago now.
Yeah.
I read them then.
I used to keep a list of people I lent books to because I forget when I lend books to people until I go look for that book.
Yeah.
But then I lost the list. So
I'm sure we have customers who have like full documentation of here's all the books that I have. Here's the stuff that I've given to so-and-so.
I would be completely surprised if we didn't.
Yeah. I mean, like Tommy and Libby had a binder full of all of the stuff that they read and had bought that they would consult when they would buy new stuff at events and things like that, which I think is amazing.
That's too much for me.
I kind of like it. This is weird, but I almost kind of like it when I don't get a paper. Like, again, speaking just about paperbacks, hardcovers, I would feel differently. I kind of almost like it when I don't get a book back, because I like honestly don't mind buying it again.
Sure.
And like, I just know, like, oh, part of my library is always going to be with them.
Oh,
you know, like even if
that's
like,
wholesome,
or like, or they'll read it and maybe like it'll mean something to them, or maybe we've parted ways and I won't get it back, but I don't know. I kind of, part of me is like really not mad about not getting books back.
I can that relate to that, because like I don't keep track of what books I've already bought. It's the same as like I don't know. Sometimes I double buy books or DVDs or things like that, and I think it's great because then I have one to gift to somebody. Like, obviously, I really like it because I bought it twice.
Totally. I don't know. I have a really hard time keeping track of my library anyway. Like, I have, and it got so much worse after working at the bookstore because I take so many things home. But I have like boxes that are just full of books that I don't think I could tell you what's in some of these boxes. open them up and be like, oh my God, I forgot about this. Like, kind of status, which I think is fun. Kelly, what about you? What books have come out recently in paperback that you want to shout out?
There's a few. I mean, we talked about Ruin of Kings and the Bastard series. The one that I like have been recommending for the past few years now, which is crazy to think about. But Cersei by Madeline Miller just came out.
Yeah.
Paperback this April. So this was a few months ago now, but still kind of new. It feels new because it was in hardcover for 2 years.
Yeah.
But like, this is one of those books that it just was so easy to sell because it just was, you know, a New York Times bestselling book from the first week. And it was Publishers Weekly Book of the Year in 2018 when it first came out, which is a big deal. And it completely deserves all of those accolades. It is so wonderful. And for anyone who doesn't know, it is a novel, a standalone, which is also very refreshing, about Circe, the Greek goddess Circe. Told from her perspective about her growing up in with, you know, the gods and demigoddesses and all that sort of stuff, and then being eventually exiled to the island of Aea and having to, for the first time, sort of live a life on her own. And as she does so, she actually learns witchcraft, and a lot of the witchcraft is in tune with the nature surrounding her, with the animals and the plants. And
that sounds so up your alley.
It's exactly. And, you know, as she kind of lives on this island, and it's a human island, right? It's the land of the mortals. So she becomes, and as a demigoddess herself, she feels like of two worlds, you know, among the goddess and gods, and also kind of a companionship with some of the humans that she interacts with. And so you have those kind of introspective thoughts and growth as a character, especially as a woman character, just so interesting and just dealt with so amazingly. And at the same time, you have all of this Greek mythology that you just love reading about. You know, Daedalus and Icarus are there. You get Hermes. She has relationships with them. She has all of this. I mean, just the best sort of, I mean, of course, Odysseus. This was in Odysseus is the Circe is the witch where Odysseus comes to her in the original Homer, and he turns all of his men into pigs And so you get her perspective of why she did that, which is also really good. And then you get a very in-depth look at her relationship with Odysseus, which is quite touching and really cool to see.
That's fascinating.
And so it's just beautifully written and such a wonderful book to read at any time, really. And it just scratches that itch for fantasy and, you know, literary works. And I just loved it, and I have never stopped loving it. So finally, it's out in paperback, and it's one of those books that, like, I'm going to gift to everybody now, whether you read it or not. I think I gave it to two people already. It's just so good. I love it a lot.
That's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's, like, that's something we keep coming back to, is just the, like, being able to gift people books or lend people books, especially when their paperback is, like, I don't know. It makes me feel good to, like, share stories I love with other people.
Of course. That's how we do what we do. And it's like what Kylie was saying about it being a little bit easier to kind of hand sell those books as well. It just, you see this kind of, in the year it takes, usually it's about a year in between the book comes out in hardcover and eventually comes out in paperback by the publisher. You've seen ups and downs of the book sales, right? Sometimes it's really popular the first 2 weeks it comes out. Sometimes it's a little bit of a slow burn, like it's not everybody knows about it, but then they become aware a couple months in, or, you know, it goes in waves. So to have kind of pick back up, I had that happen, I think, with Scythe by Neil Schusterman, YA book.
Oh man, that book sold for so long.
It had a lapse for us at Mysterious Galaxy, but when it in paperback, it was flying off the shelves again. Mm-hmm. And then
we couldn't keep it in.
Yeah, so it's just, it feels so good to be, it's a little bit of validation, right? Because you're like, I love this book, and now it's more accessible and people can read it. And
totally.
And they can travel with it. And
I mean, that's the thing it's always been for me, which is the accessibility. Like, it's so much easier to save up for a paperback, like, growing up, than it is to save up for a hardcover. Because it's like a $20 difference, usually.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, especially, you know, we had this conversation, like, in our work Slack earlier about just, like, recommendations for kids, but, like, I was reading adult fantasy when I was in, like, middle school, early high school, but, like, I couldn't afford more than paper. Well, most of the time I could talk my parents into buying books for me, but, like, I would save my allowance or save whatever money I, like, scrounged together and would go buy books. And so I was always reading, like, stuff that had been out for a long time because I couldn't afford the new hardcovers on the shelf.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad's bookshelf, which were, you know, just a bunch of 70s and 80s sci-fi fantasy books. And free. I remember you saying that makes me remember a time I was working at Books Inc. up in San Francisco, and a young kid literally spent every dime he had in his pocket for a copy of The Hobbit by Tolkien. And he was like something like 30 cents short, and he was like digging his pocket. I was like, I will personally, this is 30 from my pocket. Here you go. like, don't worry about it. I'm just, you know, in tears, like, oh my God.
Yeah. That's so great. That's so precious.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, that's the whole thing, right? Like, being a bookseller is, like, I think for all of us, like, the reason we want to work at bookstores is because we have a passion for this thing and want to be able to, like, recommend stuff to other people.
Yeah.
Or just share stories with other people, right? Like, I get recommendations from our customers all the time on stuff that I had not heard of or
I love when
had
that
not
happens.
Thought to pick up. Yeah. Yeah, flip the table on, recommend me stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me what I should be reading. Especially because I feel like a lot of our most of our customers are a lot more knowledgeable about genre than I think I am, actually. People that have been, especially longtime customers of the store. Because I didn't really, you know, I read sci-fi fantasy, but I was not immersed in the genre in the same way that I have been now.
Yeah, well, I think also a lot of our loyal customers, you know, they've been alive a lot longer than us. They've been reading for...
That's true.
You know what I mean? And not, of course, like everybody, but it's like, I used to feel so intimidated because I was this young woman working in bookstores. Like, this was probably before Mysterious Galaxy, but, you know, I kept...
Yeah.
It was very easy to think, like... Who am I, this 21-year-old person, to recommend you know, science fiction or fantasy to someone who has been reading it their whole life. They seem to know so much more. But then,
yeah,
like, the beauty of working in a bookstore is, like, that knowledge does come to you, and just because you might not know some of the classics that they do or some of the obscure books that they do, but you are so much more aware of, like, the new books that are coming out. And mm-hmm. that in itself is very important, because new voices are being shared, new voices are being published.
Well, yeah, and that's a valuable thing, right? Like, I think that for folks who aren't, like, deliberately going out and seeking new stuff, being able to have a bookseller tell you, like, oh, like, this is someone that's, like, on the up and up that I think that you would like based on, like, stuff you've bought before.
Right, or here's a voice that you normally don't seek out that you need to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always really sort of proud of those, like, older customers that come in when you're able to put something, like, that seems, that they think is outside their wheelhouse, right, and then they fall in love with it.
Right.
Just like, oh, like, see, like, you do have it in you to, like, broaden those horizons.
And it reminds us to always broaden our horizons, right? And it's,
yeah, really, totally.
It's never a moment where I'm recommending a book to a customer that I don't think about what I'm reading and what I have set up in my own to be read pile, right? It's yeah. It's always such a back and forth.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
I have so many other books that I could talk about that came out in paperback. I don't want to, like, spend the whole time talking about my stuff, though. Actually, Becca, I had a question for you, because a lot of the stuff that you read...
Yes.
I know you read a lot of comics and things, so there's not usually that transition from, like, hardcover to paperback to worry
about. Yeah, so, like, the weirdest part for me when I was, like, thinking about this and thinking about what I would bring that, like, I've read this year is, like, most of what I read in any given year is a paperback, because I mostly read comics, and even when comics come out in volumes, like, it is still a paperback. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously there's, like, big collections and stuff, like artist editions that have, like, you know, a nice crisp hardcover, but
sure.
I just think, like,
comics have the opposite journey that, like, books do, right? Books get, like, hardcovers and then paperbacks and then mass markets. But, like, comics usually have, like, single issues and then you get, like, the trade paperback. And then sometimes you'll get, like, a hardcover omnibus.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the hardcover stuff is, you know, like, it's an anniversary edition, it's a special feature, it's an exclusive, things like that. Like, and it's something that I do really love about the comic genre, because, like, The most important thing to me about paperbacks is accessibility, and I feel like so much of the creation and stability of comic books is trying to have that low, accessible price. And, like, you know, when you do the math, like, yeah, you could spend about, like, $15 buying, like, what, like, 5 issues of a comic? But, like, or you can buy the volume for the same amount, and it's all right there. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing for me, like, how, like, you guys are, like, talking about, like, how you'll buy the hardcover and then you'll buy the paperback when it comes out. I usually buy the single issues and then still buy the volumes, because when you and your partner read as many comics and have as many comic boxes as Dan and I do, the volume is so much easier to locate. Usually the comic ends up in, like, 6 different boxes, and you can find issue 3, but you can't find 2, and...
I believe that.
And a lot of the horror that I read as well, I would say, is usually in paperback, like, straight away, and I think that it's just, like, an interesting thing. Like, when I was thinking about books I really like, I was thinking, like, wow, a lot of the books I read on a, like, regular basis just are, like, paperbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, you know, same thing, I think it came up briefly earlier, but, like, there are cases where a book will come out as just, like, a paperback release, and then it does really well, and it gets a lot of, like, notoriety, and then they'll do hardcover editions for mm-hmm. fans that, like, want the pretty hardcovers. So, like, the Murderbot Tor.com novellas, the Martha Wells, were paperback originals, and then they did hardcover versions, and I think now there's, like, there's also Network Effect, which is, like, a full book, but did they do, like, a combined, like, here's all the Murderbots together?
I don't think they've done that yet.
I think it's coming out, because I want to say, I saw like an IB order for it. I thought I had seen a thing about
they
it.
They probably
earlier.
Will. They did that. They did that same thing with the Binti books by Nnedi
the Binti books.
Because those were originally paperback, like tour novellas. And then they did the hardcover editions. And then they released an omnibus last year. Oh, and they also just released the paperback version of the omnibus earlier this year. So
that book has the many Sarah lives. Gailey. The Sarah Gailey American Hippo was is a combined of her tour.coms because it was River of Teeth and I don't remember the sequel's name right now.
Something about
a hippo.
Yeah, hippos in Louisiana in the bayou. Sounds like a terrible idea,
but I mean, you know, all of that goes to show how much our purchases, that everyone's purchases of these books. It goes so far in the publishing world. I mean, whether you buy a book. So, and it also determines, you know, the outcome of that book series, if it's a series of books, and the author's success. So like when you buy a book in hardcover, that's the first in the series, those sales are going to show to the publisher and they're going to have, they're going to be able to justify having that book come out in trade paperback, mass market paperback, making it more accessible for everybody to get that book, and vice versa, your sales of the paperback of, you know, book one will show the publisher that they should be invested in book two, in book three. You know, all of these purchases of these books go so far.
Yeah,
I feel like you like know a book has like been super successful when it moves from a mass market back to a trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we just saw, like, there's a new edition of the first, Wheel of Time. There's a new trade paperback edition of the first Wheel of Time book coming out soon. And it's so nice. Because I haven't read those. And now I'm thinking about it because there's a trade paperback.
Good. Kylie, I think you'd really like them.
I think I would too.
I need to finish that series. I didn't read the last three, but it's been over a decade since I read the others, and I don't remember enough that I would feel confident jumping back in now.
Well, maybe you can buy the new
trade
paperback.
That series was really good. Maybe I will.
It's so pretty, Gary.
It is really pretty.
It's tempting. They did the, they actually split the first, this is just on Wheel of Time, they split the first Wheel of Time book into two separate small hardcovers.
Oh, I
that
saw
came
that,
out
yeah.
last year.
Really?
Which I think is also strange. But I think that those even moved, like, okay. I don't think we sold a ton of them, but I think people bought them up. They had like...
You know, Gary, I think we sold like two.
Yeah.
I don't think we sold many of them. I think there's also like times, like that's an example of a publisher maybe experimenting.
I feel like I received a lot of them.
I don't know if we sold them.
I don't know if that's true.
I did. So I think that they were experimenting right before the holidays, right? Which is another thing.
Sure. Yeah.
But I mean,
I don't want to buy half a book.
That's the thing. And then you also don't know if it's going to come out in that series, you know, for this, and especially with a book like that. I mean, that's a 14 book series, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, you really, why buy the first one or two or split the first books split up into two if you know it's going to match the whole
book? I feel like they've been trying a lot of stuff with Wheel of Time because there's been talk about that Amazon Prime series that's supposed to be coming eventually. Yeah.
They will experiment a lot with books and with popular books, too. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like, I think
we'll see what sells.
Yeah, Penguin Random House has been experimenting with pocket editions of some young adult books.
Oh. Yeah, I remember that. They did the John Green
idea
batch.
But it's also very strange because it's like, it's cute and it's a cute stocking stuffer, but beyond that, I don't know if people are actually reading those editions, right? We're talking about...
You also have to read those sideways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The pages turn up.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's a little weird, but yeah, so you see the publishers kind of experiment and try things.
I like, you know, I kind of admire that pubs are willing to...
Make those
like,
experiments.
Be experimental in that way. Yeah, to see what works. I don't know. Does anyone else have any books that they really want to shout out?
I want to shout out Merciful Crow.
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, it'll be out in paperback, and I think everybody should read it because I love it so much. So it's about this world that's divided into a caste system that is named after birds. And the very, very tippity top are the phoenixes, and they're the royalty. And then the crows are the very bottom of the barrel. And okay. they aren't protected by anything. They don't have, I forget what they call it. It's been a hot second. But, like, they don't have, like, they all have, like, kind of like a spiritual guide. And the crows don't necessarily have one that everyone else thinks is, like, a thing.
Okay.
And they're kind of very discriminated against. However, everyone needs them because there's this plague that dominates the world. And the only people who are immune to it are the crows. And it's really beautiful. It's done really well. I absolutely love it. That's the one that inspired my first cosplay ever.
Oh, amazing.
I loved it. And so everyone should read that one, too.
That book is
excellent. I've heard really, really good things about that.
I have one. It is one of those... Again, it's one of those, like, books that I loved, but I, like, never really got an opportunity to hand sell. But it just came out in paperback. It's a YA space opera. It's called Mirage by Samaya Dawd. And it is, like, a Moroccan-inspired space opera. It's super cool. The world building is... Oh. Amazing. And it's basically about this this girl who like is like she lives in this like village on one of the planets that is a part of this like empire kind of thing, and she gets taken by the like the imperial troops that come through because she looks just like the princess, like they're almost identical. Oh. And so she basically gets kidnapped and is forced to be like a body double, and the princess is kind of mean and all this stuff, and she's just trying to like survive and learn how to like do her job so that her family's okay. But like it's so good. And the sequel just came out, but I was waiting for a long time for it to come out in paperback so I could try and hand sell it again. So that one I think came out like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Very excited.
Nice. You had me at space opera.
It's fun. I really liked it.
That's amazing. I think that's the one I have an owl crate of.
Yeah, it was an Owl Crate book last year.
So I think I'm going to read that, and then I'll read the second one.
Yeah. Yes. The second one's called Court of Lions, in case anyone is wondering.
Yeah. There, Caitlin, who used to work at Mysterious Galaxy, loved it when it first came out, and she talked to me about it, and I, you know, just opened the book to peek in it, and the language was beautiful. Just seemed like it's extremely well-written, and so that's what got me hooked on that one. I haven't read it yet, but... It's been on my list ever since.
Amazing. I always love a like well-written like fantasy or fiction story, mm-hmm. or whatever, like just there's something so like poetic sometimes that you get about that I feel like doesn't happen so like super often in prose.
It kind of depends.
I don't know if it it does depend, and I don't think it happens super often in young adult or necessarily fantasy, and that's not a bad thing at all, but it's a little bit more rare, I feel like, and so like when I stumbled across Strange the Dreamer by Lonnie Taylor, I fell in love because her language is so beautiful. Leigh Bardugo is really like
it's the reason why I'm really bummed that we haven't gotten the third Patrick Rothfuss book, is because I think that his language is actually really fantastic.
That's what makes that book stand out to me. I mean, I honestly, I think I've told everybody about this, like I do not pitch that book. I let it pitch itself. I don't bother telling people what it's about, because if I did, it would sound like any other fantasy. But what I do is give the book to the customer and I say, read the prologue. It's less than a
Mm-hmm.
And then they're hooked because it's such wonderful language.
Yeah. Well, it's a book that made such an impression on, like, I remember where I was when I picked that book up off the shelf. Yeah. Like, and I have so many, like, I can't do that for every book that I picked up, but that one, like, made an impression in a real way.
Yeah.
I have a bunch more on my list, but the only other one that I really want to shout out in this episode is This Is How You Lose the Time War. By Amal Amutar and Max Gladstone, because that came out in paperback recently, but also just won a Hugo.
It did.
Yeah.
So I'm so
it's
excited.
Also won a bunch of other, like, I'm so happy for them. I love this book so much. I've talked about it on the podcast before. It's this really great, like, enemies to lovers time travel romance story told through letters.
So good.
Back and forth. It's so good. I want to read. I'm going to reread that, actually.
I need to read it.
I blew through it in like a day. It's so easy. It's so well done. It's
like if you want to talk about a book that has beautiful prose, like it, that, because it's.
Well, it's the thing. They're letters to each other. They're like beautiful, heartfelt. They're taunting and like merciless at the beginning, and then they become these really beautiful, like tender things.
Aww. Yeah, it's
good.
Great.
It's so good.
I didn't realize it was an enemies to lovers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're from opposite sides of the war.
That's like my favorite romance trope.
It is really so good.
It's a good trope.
Beck and I just talked about it on the minisode that went out today.
Sorry, I was very distracted because the dog just came and like shoved himself under my desk and was just staring me.
We were talking about enemies to lovers.
God, I love enemies to lovers.
I do too.
Let me tell you something.
I have like.
How are you guys all feeling? I have like. Just want to shout out another one?
Two more.
Okay, go for
two
it.
Two more. One is Hollow Kingdom by Kira Jane Buxton. Debut author, just came out last year.
Oh, yeah.
And it just came out in paperback a month ago, just this summer. And it's quite timely, which is like in the sense of like what's going on with the pandemic. But in a way that I think a lot of people will be able to find interest in and not be, like, tired about hearing the pandemic, about a pandemic or about, you know.
Yeah. I love the cover of this book so much also, by the way.
Yeah, it's so what it is, it's a full novel told by the perspective of a crow, a domesticated crow. He goes by ST, but that's short for shit turd. And he is a domesticated crow by, you know, he's kind of lived his whole life with this human, Big Jim. And, you know, in the beginning of the novel, he's talking about what he's observing, how he loves humanity. He loves the wonderful inventions, things like Cheetos that just show humans how humans have
God, relatable
and artistic levels, you know, out into the world. And he thinks that something's up. When his human eyes fall out of his head, and he basically in essence becomes a zombie, and so he kind of goes around and is like, "This isn't right. I just don't think that this makes sense." And so he teams up with the dog, of the household, who you don't really hear anything from. You know, there's no perspective from the dog. It's just kind of like this dumb, goofy dog, which is just heartbreakingly cute and wonderful, and just trying to survive in this kind of zombie-like world. And it's their journey to find out what's happening across Seattle, and you know, finding out that this is not an isolated incident, that humans are becoming zombies. But it's not exactly a zombie story. But it's so wonderful because it's set from the point of view from like of an animal. You also get these little inserts in between chapters of animals around the world realizing that this is happening to humanity as well.
That's
the author writes from the perspective. So in I think after a couple of chapters, hearing what ST is about, is going on about, it cuts to a domesticated cat and their perspective of their human dying, which they don't give a shit about. And it's wonderful. And then there's also like a very sensitive and wonderful and moving chapter set from the perspective of an elephant who remembers everything, right? And it's just gorgeously told and so interesting. This combination of
I didn't know that's what this book was about.
Yeah, so you have like and it's so great seeing this bird that loves humanity so much, who considers himself a human in a way.
Yeah,
just loving these very simple things that we take for granted. You know, paper clips,
like Cheetos.
I mean, and it's just it's really touching and wonderful. And I think it can resonate in what's going on right now and kind of what humanity is capable of and why it's so precious, and of the amazing power of nature. So I love that. It just came out in paperback. And then,
that sounds great.
Yeah, the other one is The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern, which is, I think, two weeks ago, came out in paperback.
Yeah.
Very quick from hardcover, I think less than a year, if that. But that's a wonderful story. She is she's a gorgeous writer as well. If you've read The Night Circus, then you know her style of writing. She has maintained that in her follow-up, Starless Sea, and that is about, it's really a love letter to literature and books and fantasy and the literal doors that you can open to other worlds. And so that one's fantastic as well.
Oh, we lost Becca.
Becca, come back.
I guess the pupper is not happy.
Oh no. I hope he's okay. He'll be okay. They gotta take care of their pup. It's okay.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know if they'll be back or not, but it feels like we were wrapping up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm gonna...
No, that works. I can talk about Nottingham. That's the only other one that I have.
Tell me about Nottingham, because doing orders for customers online today, I noticed that people are buying the sequel that is coming out soon.
Are they?
What?
We've got orders for the sequel.
Oh, that's super exciting. Yeah, Nottingham is so fun. I am a sucker for everything Robin Hood. Exactly. And so many people are, which it means that the market for Robin Hood is very saturated. So for me to fall in love with a Robin Hood story at this point is, it actually says a lot because it's so saturated, right?
Well, there's so many.
I remember when we got this arc, I had picked it up. Or no, I don't even think I intentionally picked it up. I think I had set an arc down, like some of my books down, and then it made its way home with me. And I read the back of it. And I'm like, no, this is not a Victoria book.
This is a Kelly book.
As much as I love Robin Hood, this is not a Victoria book. It's a Kelly book.
You put it right on my desk, and it was the same thing. And I fell in love with it. And it was, the publisher was pitching it as, you know, Robin Hood meets Game of Thrones, which I can see why, because the book itself is set from the perspective of five-ish, six characters. And so each chapter is a different character's point of view.
I love that.
Of which Robin is... very few chapters are from his perspective. So it's really not a book about Robin. It's a book about Nottingham and what's going on politically, the war and the Crusades in the 12th century, what's going on the political level of, you know, war, and then also what's going on in these kind of small towns and local politics and characters that you know and love and, you know, and even characters that were added. What I really like about what Nathan did is he added a character named Elena. And so you have both Elena and Marion perspectives. So you have two women perspectives in this very kind of male dominated story. And so all the characters are really well-rounded, and it's more than just like a fun, it's not even fantasy, right? It's a historical novel, but it's also incredibly snarky. Like the characters who talk to each other are just, oh, the dialogue is just whip smart. And I think that comes from the book actually being a play that the author wrote and acted in and produced.
Oh.
Yeah. So the Nathan Makarik is a playwright, screenwriter, or no, maybe not screenwriter. Maybe. I'd have to look at the bio again, but he's definitely created this play and wrote this play and helped produce it in LA for a long time, 6 years or something.
That's amazing.
And so having that theater background and having those characters be so alive for so long, not only on the page, but actually on the stage, helped cement these characters in his mind so that when he actually wrote them down, you know, you have these strong...
That's a fascinating way to like produce a novel.
Yeah.
Like doing it as a play and having actors like literally breathe life into these characters and then taking the experience from that and like crafting your story. That's so cool.
He came for, you know, as I read the book and I immediately was like, all right, let's get an event set up with this guy. He did. And it was really interesting to hear that side of things when he talked about it. And then it was very cool to have him read from the book because he's in theater.
Yeah.
And it was very, you know, he picked a very funny moment to read. And so I don't know, it's just a really good, you know, it's historical fiction. It's Robin Hood. It's well-written. It's fast paced. It's got interesting characters and it's got humor. And so it just was such a delightful surprise to me when I read it. And so the paperback comes out in September, so next month, just a couple weeks from now. And I'm really excited for that one because that's definitely going to be a book that is easier to hand sell as paperback and to get people excited about.
Yeah. amazing. All right. I feel like that's a, like, we had a bunch of recommendations. Of course, for folks listening at home, all of our other recommendations that we didn't have time to talk about will be in the episode description, so people can check those out as well. I'm very excited for some of them. There's just, I put a Thrawn book on my list. I put Rage of Dragons on my list.
Oh yeah, I have a whole other mess of like some romance stuff.
Yeah, so for folks who usually just listen to the episode, like, take the time to go through the description on this one, because it's going to have a whole bunch of recommendations that we didn't talk about. Before we wrap up, what's everyone reading right now?
Go ahead, Victoria.
I was going to say, I'm currently reading Key to Fear by Kirsten Cass, and I'm really liking it, but it's super timely in that it's about a global pandemic / plague that spread through touch. So literally, like, you can't touch anyone, because if they have it, you get it, and then that's it.
I don't like that.
It's so intense. I'm literally having to, like, read a chapter and then take a break and read a chapter. I'm loving every nail biting moment of it, but I'm literally biting nails off because it's so intense.
Yikes. That sounds fascinating. Kelly, what are you reading?
I was gonna say, I just finished, so I had a little bit of a slump in July, but now I'm reading like a million books. I finished Mexican Gothic, and it's so freaking good. I just finished that a couple of weeks ago, and it's a new release. And it is a traditional Gothic book, which is like, it hits all the right spooky hits, awesome. Right? So it is about a young woman who, it's family set in Mexico, and she gets a mysterious letter from her cousin who just got married off to a very wealthy Englishman, and the letter is fraught with, you know, like concerns of really what's going on, because it is, she thinks she's been poisoned, she doesn't know what's happening to her, she's hearing whispering in the walls, and she's really just not herself. So the main character decides, well, I'm gonna go to this house, I'm going to check up on my cousin. I'm going to see if this is what's going on and help her. And so when she enters this house, the same sort of things happen to her. And she starts hearing these whispering in the walls, and she starts feeling like there's not exactly, there's a deeper level of what this family has done in the past. There's some murders that have happened that have been hushed about. There is, you know, she's not allowed to leave the house, and they get very upset when she does. She finds that the father of the husband of her cousin, is very into eugenics. So there's, very interesting things that she's unraveling in all throughout you have this setting of this, you know, very, upscale house that's like, may or may not be part of the story. Right. Then this kind of, it's a super, kind of a supernatural twist to it as well. So I adored that. It's so good. And then I am, I also just finished Always Human by Ari North.
Yeah.
A young adult, or kids really, upper kids, graphic novel. It's just a beautiful love story set in, like, I think 23rd century or something like that. It's like a sci-fi romance story about these.
Oh yeah. I think I saw you share the link to it the other day.
Yeah. It's just two girls who fall in love, and it's just so wonderful and beautiful and just so wholesome. And I read it in like 40 minutes. It's so worth your time though. And so that was really fun. And then I'm reading a biography on Cleopatra by Stacey Schiff. Which has been on my reading list for about 10 years now. So thanks, quarantine.
Great. What about you, Kylie?
I just started a new book. Well, the one I just finished was, it's called American Spy. It's by Lauren Wilkinson, which I did want to mention earlier because it came out in paperback this year, and it's one that I had wanted to read, but I didn't buy it because it was hardcover and I had a billion other books to buy at the time, but it came out in paperback and I was like, oh, I'll pick it up now. And I just finished it and I really liked it. It is a Cold War spy thriller that's set in like the late 80s and like early 90s. So like right at the tail end and then right after the Cold War. But it was interesting because it's like, I love Cold War thrillers, and so I've read quite a few, but this one was different because it took place in, like, a lot of the action was in New York and then in West Africa, so it was a different theater of the Cold War that I wasn't used to reading about, but it was really well written. I loved the main character. She was super compelling, and yeah, so I really would recommend that if you're into Cold War thrillers. And then I just started, like, I'm only like two chapters in, I'm barely into it. A book coming out from Tor in September called Master of Poisons by Andrea Hairston. And it's just like epic fantasy. I don't really know what it's about yet, but, I'm enjoying, I think the language is super cool. Like the prose and the way the style of the language is really interesting. So I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds awesome. I talked about it on this week's minisode. It had been a long time since I had like finished a book. So I finished a bunch recently. I finished two different Star Wars books. I finished The Poe Dameron Freefall by Alex Segura that we just did an event for last week. 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago, maybe, by the time people hear this? I don't even know anymore. Time makes no sense. And I also read the sequel to Alphabet Squadron, Shadowfall, which is a bunch of, like, pirates in the New Republic. Not pirates. Pilots in the New Republic after the fall of the Empire, fighting against, like, an elite TIE fighter unit that is still active in the galaxy. That has been really good. There has been, all the characters are super compelling. Someone fell from one side to the other at the end of this of the books, and just like really, but like I love everyone's motivations. I think the characters are so well done. That's great. Very, very excited. And then, I just read Red Rising, the Pierce Brown. I literally finished that like before we sat down to record. people have been telling me to read that for years, but I actually really, really enjoyed it. So that was really fun. And I think I'm going to start Golden Sun next, but also Memory of Souls by Jen Lyons is out this month. And I kind of want to just go back and reread the first two books.
Is it time to reread that series again?
I think it is, Kylie. Kylie, we should reread them so that we can talk about them again.
Yeah, we should probably.
Cause I love them.
Just like slowly add a new staff member of Mysterious Galaxy
to our reads. Group.
So like that's for the first one now. So now you get him on the rereads and then like next it's gonna be Darcy.
it's real good. Everyone go back and listen to our interview with Jen Lyons.
Oh my god, that was so fun. I was so happy she joined us for that. We're doing an event with her next week.
2 weeks.
Not next week from what after this podcast comes out. Time so it's next week people listening. Podcast time makes no sense. So I think I might just reread those.
That's fair. I might listen to the audiobooks. I'm pretty sure. I love the audiobooks. And they're so good.
Yeah, I kind of want to do that too. Like I have a copy, and of course I'll buy the hardcover when it comes out this month. But I want to listen to the audiobook for the third one, so I think I'll just like re-listen to the first two and then do that.
I'm excited because she said that the narrators for the third book are the same narrators that are the first audiobook.
Yeah, it's the same characters. It's the Thurvishar and Kirin.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Voice actors, which I think is going to be awesome. There's also so many new perspectives. For folks who don't know, the first book is just like Kirin's story told from two different people. And then the second book introduces like two different character perspectives that go in different directions. And then the third book, all bets are off the table. There's like six different perspectives that happen over the course of the book. And every time a new character is a protagonist character, I'm just like, yes, or point of view character.
And there's lots of footnotes, which we love.
So many footnotes. They're great. It's so good.
Anyway.
I think I'm going to read those. All right. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And chatting with us.
Of course, thanks.
Thank you, everyone, of course, for listening. You can find all the books we talked about today in the links in the description or just through our website, mistgalaxy.com. If you want to follow the store, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Mist Galaxy Books. Of course, we want to say thank you to Austin Farmer for letting us use our intro and outro music there from the track Kill the Farm Boy from his album Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra. You can check that out on Spotify. The link is also in the description for that as well. And yeah, we'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away. Bye, everyone.
Bye.